See if this sounds familiar, listeners. Two best mates taking their wooden house on a never-ending ocean trip of hatred against the French. One man wants glory, one man just wants to look at birds.
Everyone suffers salt, sadness and bad vibes until teamwork and questionable nautical decisions save the day.
I think that sounds either exactly like our show or Master and Commander Far Side of the World starring Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany. What do you reckon?
We are on a big boat right now. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast! Theme song. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm in good spirits today.
Good.
I'm sleeping a lot, often at the wrong times of day. But I'm just learning to let that go.
Yeah.
I'm exercising a lot. I'm a lot smaller than I was. But beyond that, much the same. The big news, someone's 37 today as we record this.
I am. It is birthday.
Birthday.
I'm 37 today. It's been very lovely.
Yeah.
Had a nice long sleep in because didn't get in till 2 a.m.
No, because we were too busy celebrating your birthday.
Yeah, we were playing Jackbox party games until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
With
hopped up on sugar and Haribo.
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing. Monster and sugar snacks. It was so good. And Lars made pizza and cheese sticks and shit. That was fucking amazing.
As ever.
Honestly, it was incredible.
How do you feel? Do you feel older, wiser? Now you're nearly 40.
I feel a bit sleepy, but other than that, I'm kind of golden.
Kind of the same.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's all good.
Well, let's get into what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've already mentioned Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, 100%. The thrilling conclusion to our Peter Weir trilogy.
Yes.
And I wanted to bring this because we've had Peter Weir exploding onto the scene into everybody's mass wide awareness with Dead Poets Society.
Yeah.
Nominated for loads of Oscars.
Yeah.
Won loads of Oscars.
Yeah.
Changed culture.
100%.
Then we followed up with Truman Show. Massive film.
Yeah.
Nominated for loads of Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, huge cultural moment. It's probably one of the most referenced songs in hip hop of all time.
Yeah.
And then we have Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, which flopped. But still nominated, still got nominated for 10 Oscars.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is widely forgotten. But I, if we're covering Peter Weir, I want everyone to see this film.
Because
I think it is a long buried, forgotten gem. And once you know, you know. There is a club of people who love this film.
Mm-hmm.
I hope some of them are listening today. And if you've not seen it, watch out, because we're about to tell you exactly what happens.
Yeah, we're about to spoil the fuck out of it. So yeah, in this episode, we're going to be getting into why this film got me initially.
The politics and why we don't talk about them.
The making of.
Why we all grew up with this exact story. We've seen it 1,000 times before in a place you may not know.
Okay.
And finally, we're going to be getting into...
What's it all mean?
What does it all mean?
What's it all mean?
What's it about?
What is it?
What's it about? But for 2 minutes, just very briefly, there are some people who've not seen this film and are never planning to. They just want to hang out for the show.
Silly.
Because they're regular listeners and they like hanging out with us.
All right, well,
and
that's less silly.
That's less silly. So welcome.
Yeah,
we're
going to
let you know what happens in this film.
All right.
For those people who've seen it before, they don't mind spoilers, but they can't really remember. It was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We'll let them know. If you're one of the third group, hasn't seen this film in the 20 years it's been out, but are still planning to, it's still on the to-watch list, spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning.
Shall I kick us off?
Go for it, man.
It's 1805. Ugh. 1805 is a much sexier year.
That's such an impressive...
Yeah.
Wait, that's not even
a word.
You fucked up numbers.
Funny that.
That's impressive.
Funny the number dyslexic fucked up the number.
That's mad.
It's 1805 and Captain Jack Aubrey is driving the HMS Surprise with the confidence of a man who absolutely refuses to even consider he might not be God's gift to sailing. His mission? Chase down the Acheron, a French boat that's annoyingly bigger, faster, and altogether more Napoleonic sea demon menace than anything Jack wants in his face right now.
Yeah.
After their first encounter, leaving the Surprise looking like a slightly chewed dog toy, Jack becomes obsessively determined to catch the thing, even as morale dips and the crew starts blaming everything on bad luck or ghosts or crystals or the fact it's Tuesday.
Sounds like my date in history. Meanwhile, Jack's best friend and resident science nerd, Dr. Stephen Maturin,
yeah,
is trying to balance hacking off children's limbs to save their life, scientific curiosity, and the eternal struggle of telling Jack to think for a fucking second. Their friendship gets tested, stretched, and occasionally soldered back together with cello duets.
Yes, it does.
I nearly said cello. I need you to know that.
Cellophane.
I hadn't read this before. Could have been tape that followed that. I don't know. This is all a mystery to me.
After enough parental bickering to make the kids talented artists, Jack finally realizes Stephen's nerdy science hobbies might actually save the day. And together, they hatch a plan that lets the surprise punch way above its weight class. With half the crew filled with rotting wood splinters, children missing, and his best mate very nearly dead, the day is won, with little to no casualties that mattered.
That's one way of putting it, yeah.
You'd never seen this before. What were your thoughts?
To be honest, mate, when I first started watching this, A, I didn't know whether you were fucking with me.
Right.
B, I didn't know whether our friendship had finally drifted so far and so fast
right.
that I'd just not seen it coming. And I was like, oh my God, Rob thinks I'm into this.
Yeah.
Rob thinks this would benefit me.
I knew that this was going to be a hard sell. It's a period drama.
Threw me.
It's about authority.
It's on a fucking boat.
It's on a boat.
In 1805.
Yeah.
I was, as soon as the title cards, it's 1805.
Yeah.
We're on a boat.
Yeah.
Here you go. I was like, yeah, sick. All right, let's strap in for this fucking thrill ride.
it's everything you hate in one screen.
It should be.
Yes.
It should be everything that I hate. But what I found is a gorgeous, gorgeous to look at film, perfectly framed. There are so many poignant moments that I was ridiculously emotionally invested in without merit. And it's one of the rare films where, you know, when you're watching an older film for the first time and every now and then you feel like you can check the message that just comes through on your phone. Yeah. You're like, oh, I'll just give it a quick browse
it's
and then I'm back
pace.
To it.
Do you know it's what I mean?
It's slower paced. It's this, that, and the other. This had the opposite effect. Where I was like, oh, you know, my phone vibrates and I go to pick it up and then something happens and I'm like, you can wait. I'm about to find out why this man in a wig cares about this other man who is also in a wig. Let's have a listen, see what's going on here. And then before you know it, there's a ship in the distance and it looks like he's gaining in. They're closing in on him 6 hours away.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay, it's less tense, but also still pretty fucking tense.
Right.
Which is mad. And it's like a weird magic that this film has. It drew me in. Mm. I was fucking invested. I was in the world. I was on the boat.
Yep.
I was sleeping in a hammock.
It's a very rare example of action drama.
It's odd. It's a delicate line to tread because it mixes it perfectly.
Yeah.
Odd.
Yeah.
Fucking perfectly done though.
These people are in extraordinary circumstances doing extraordinary things whilst trying to deal with the mundane ship life and how to just keep 150 people on mission.
But also they're fucking running around trying to find a flightless bird.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't understand. There's so much to it.
Yeah.
There's so many different lines of inquiry into this film.
There are, and it's masterfully presented, but it's also, and I'll tell you why later, incredibly simple. And I can explain this film with two words that everyone will intuitively understand in about 20 minutes when I get to it.
Sounds good.
I was worried about this film because I love it.
Okay.
But there's specific reasons, very specific ocean reasons that I love it. So as I've said before on the show, but maybe there's a new listener, I lived in a house with my grandmother, my mother, and my two aunts.
Yeah.
In a little dilapidated terrace house at the bottom of a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And its defining feature was its lack of any heating besides a little portable Calagas that would make you sleepy if it was on for too long.
Yeah.
And the smell of like damp books.
Got you.
And it just shelves and shelves and shelves. And there like wasn't a room in the house that wasn't like riddled with books.
Mm-hmm.
And my room was, it was quite a long living room. So we'd stapled like a brown curtain to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then like one side of the curtain was my room.
Yeah.
In order to like make an wall, just bookshelves. And all of the books were either my grandmother's books or her parents' books. So they were ancient. They were like, there wasn't a thing before 1920.
Yeah.
And so the closest I had to something that I had any interest in reading were the kind of like Boyzone adventure books.
Boyzone?
Not Boyzone. Boys.
Right.
Space. Own.
Boys Space Own.
Yes.
Boys Space Own.
Yep.
Adventure books.
Yeah.
Set in space.
No. Boys.
Boys own at sea.
Boys.
Supporting the Navy. I might be a rapper. That so, just fell out.
You know the band Boyzone? You know it's a wordplay on Boys Own.
Yeah.
From the famous magazine that used to run stories.
Sure.
That were for boys only.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so it was like, ha ha, boys own interest. And they were like, ha, right. Boys Zone.
Right.
It was a play on words. If you weren't aware of that, now you are.
Everyone is. And now everyone feels better for it.
It was a particular brand of like swashbuckling adventures. It'd be stories about explorers going into the jungle to like Indiana Jones would be in Boys Zone.
Yeah. I know these books. I'm just fucking around. I'm just causing a little mischief. Okay. I'm sorry.
Those were all I had. The Marvel comics in the cupboard. But they were
special occasions,
right? Yeah.
It's like the fancy china when guests are around.
Right, exactly.
Can I interest you in an Iron Man?
There was this kind of sense of reading these books that had, I'd skip all the battles, I'd skip all the information about the battles, the dates, and just read like about the boats. Oh, boats. And obviously growing up in Plymouth was a naval town. It built a lot of these boats. It was a major, major boat builder, which is a natural reaction to being on Plymouth shore.
Right.
Because if you look around and you want to leave because it's Plymouth.
Right.
Most of the directions are more Plymouth.
Right.
So you have to build a boat.
Right.
Like you're there for 5 weeks, you've built a fucking boat out of panic because you're like, if I go that way, it's towards Plymouth. If I go that way, it's towards Plymouth.
Quick save.
Right.
Yeah.
If I go this way, I don't know, maybe there's a whole other continent out there, which will one day be ruled by an orange man. But like...
Yeah.
I'd rather sail to the horizon than be in Plymouth. So they built shitloads of boats.
Okay.
Because it's just a natural reaction to finding yourself there.
Excellent.
Plymouth is the place that America was founded, essentially, when they all sailed off from there. And it does really make you understand America a lot more when you realize that everyone who went to form America...
had Plymouth as the last checking point.
Yeah. That was their base level. That's the bar.
Reference point. Fucking hell.
Suddenly you go, oh, it makes a lot of sense. You guys have done all right, actually.
Yeah, they landed there. The bar was low. They were like, aim mid.
Right.
Aim mid and we win.
But before you think we're getting political, it's a political film.
It is.
There is that sense where like Aubrey's the party in power. Maturin's like the opposition party being like, oh, but what if we don't do that? And then you've got the officers who are like the MPs, the parliament. They're like, right, okay, leader says this, we'll enforce it. And then you've just got 100 sad voters.
Yeah.
Who in this instance don't have a vote.
No.
But they're like, it's a little microcosm of society.
Yeah.
With like people who have power.
Yeah, yeah.
And debate the best use of it.
Yeah.
And then all the people underneath who will never have any.
Yeah.
Who have opinions. And mentals who are like, it's ghosts.
Yeah. What if the sea is turning the frogs gay?
Right. Exactly. He's your Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And then you've got Aubrey who's like, well, I'm the president of the boat and I'd love to give everyone a free back massage, but they would fucking beat us to death.
Yeah, immediately.
And then you've got Maturin played by Paul Bettany who's like, you're being a bit of a cunt. And he's like, I have to be, otherwise we all die.
Yeah.
So there is that political element to it. I do, however, know in every aspect, we are the last people to comment on that. We're just not that. So what we're going to do instead is I want to look at a little bit of the consequence of the political divide it sets up in this movie.
Okay.
So we avoid the politics and we keep it personal.
I mean, that's a shame because all of my notes are nothing but
insightful political
commentary. It's all political commentary. Okay. It's referenced to Monday. I'm so out of my depth. If we were going a political route, I'd be fucked.
I've never been less prepped
for an episode, if I'm honest with you, mate. This is all free-falling.
Good.
I've watched this film I've watched it twice.
Mm.
And the political edge of it is like, it's fine.
Yep.
I get it. The only worrying thing that I got from the political side of it is that if in 1805 I was alive, I might have been a conservative. That's my main worry that I took away from the film. Because... the way that these people are just sort of like essentially shoved on a ship because they've been doing bad on land and they're like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I told you before before you watched the film. So listeners may not know. In the 1800s Navy,
yeah,
there was a thing called press ganging,
yeah,
which is if you got shit-faced and fell asleep on a bench,
yeah,
very real possibility you'd wake up in the Atlantic on a boat and be handed a rope. And right. They're like, this is your life now.
That's a different old boy. Do you know right, what I mean?
Isn't it?
That's a different isn't old it? Boy that would have existed. Okay. So yeah, so this whole thing that is like, and they would take prisoners and stuff mm-hmm. from land and just be sort of like, yeah, give yeah. us the ones that give aren't that jails. Violent.
Yeah. Yeah. No murderers or rapists if you can manage it, but we'll do what we'll
make do.
We'll make do.
They're in the English Navy now. Let's go. That aspect of it, I was like, well, this is a surprising way to have people sort of put in into a position where their skills, they build up skills. They have mm-hmm. to be like carpenters. They learn how to be like, you know, men at sea.
Yeah.
Trainers, chefs, medics, mm-hmm. this stuff. Let's go look at a beetle.
Yeah.
We're going to the Galapagos Islands. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, it's kind of better than sitting in a little jail cell for the next
okay, so
10 years.
It did give you a fresh look at indentured servitude. And you yeah. went, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe there's some merit here.
Maybe, yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe this is something that we could revisit.
So it's based on, the whole film is based on a series of books called the Aubrey Maturin series by an English / Irish author called Patrick O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
Odd guy, made a lot of claims.
Okay.
Intensely private. Okay. Telegraph came out in like 1993, basically outing him.
Right.
It was an odd, I read the article where mm-hmm. the Telegraph outed him because yeah. there were a few claims about like, he stayed at home during the Second World War and he'd driven ambulances, but then there was possibly some intelligence work stuff.
Right.
And then they came out and basically said, that's not his real name. He's not Catholic. He's not Irish. He had a kid that died. And like everything they revealed.
What the fuck?
Was wildly personal information that wasn't that he'd lied about. It's just that he hadn't told anyone.
And these guys are like.
And they were like, expose, expose.
Right.
It was a wild article to read, but essentially there are some questions around his service history. He's an incredible researcher mm-hmm. and everything that happens in the books, I think lots of readers assumed was based on a history of service.
Right.
Which he never explicitly stated.
Right.
But might have perhaps hinted at. So he hasn't quashed the rumor.
Right.
And then they've gone, oh, he's a liar, he's this, that, or the other. He's not. He's an incredible historical researcher and one of the best-selling historical fiction authors of all time.
Okay.
Like, these books sold millions in, like, 20 different languages. And if fair. in the genre of, like, historical fiction where you take historical facts mm-hmm. and write new fictional stories through things that actually happened,
yeah.
he's, like, a titan.
Amazing.
Wrote 20 of them. This is a combination of like book 15 and like bits of other books.
Right, okay.
It was going to be the start of a huge franchise.
Okay.
This is before franchise culture really kicked off.
I'm not going to say I'm glad it wasn't. Because this film, it's an emotionally exhausting film to watch. There are moments where like I'm devastated for everyone.
Yeah.
Because you shared... You're included in this sort of like group mourning mm-hmm. of a fallen seamate. But then there's also moments where you're filled with absolute rage yeah. because one man overboard and they're like, he's dragging us back a little bit. We're going to lose 1 minute on this chase with the boat that's faster than us. Cut him out. Just
that's
let him
not
drown.
Quite what happens. So what happens in the film, dear listener, is the mast is shot through
mm-hmm.
and one of the masts drops with the sails and becomes an anchor and is literally physically dragging the boat into the wind where they will then capsize. So they have to cut the ropes still attached to the boat to get the boat to not fucking drown everyone.
Just sounds like excuses at this point. Do you know what I mean?
You're like Russell Crowe wanted that man dead.
He was like, well, he didn't want him dead, but he was more like man overboard. And then 30 seconds later gave the dude who's fallen out of the boat's best mate an axe to go cut him dry.
Would you cut the rope if it was me?
No.
Everyone was going to die, including yourself.
No, if they started cutting the rope,
yeah.
I'd be in with you.
All right.
Because fuck it, if you're going down, I'm going down. Same. You know what I mean? Who cares?
Same.
What am I going to do?
Just a couple of wet bros.
What's going to happen after that? Like, I'm just going to carry on sailing under this psychopath that's fucking yeah. losing a race with a boat who's just beat the shit out of him.
Right.
And then he's still like, yeah, but we can though. Nah, straight in the water. I'd be like, you know what? Have your axe back. See you in a bit, mate.
Oh, babe, same.
Have it.
Same. We'd be damp brothers together.
Yeah, we'd be in it. But there's that rage that comes from that, because I don't think I'd ever be able to forgive A, myself, or B, Aubrey.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be able to do it. Then there's moments where it's just innately weird and charming and sweet and kind of
there's wonderful moments of humor where Aubrey as a captain is very self-confident.
Yeah.
And you worry that it's arrogant, but then there's beautiful lines of dialogue delivered wonderfully by Russell Crowe, where obviously Lord Nelson's the shit. He's like the fucking general of the entire fucking army. Yeah. And he's met him and everyone's like, oh, what was he like? And he was like, well, I remember the day he spoke to me, he looked me in the eye. We were eating dinner together and he looked across the table, he looked me deep in the eye and he said, Aubrey, pass the salt. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah.
He knows he's not king shit. He is a very capable sailor and he's very confident, but it's not arrogance. He's got self-awareness to know.
Yeah,
he's a silly little man. He's a silly little guy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the real reason I brought this film. There's two. There's one, I think everyone should see it. But realistically, we gave a big spoiler warning at the front.
Yeah, 100%.
Saying if you haven't seen this, go watch it first, right? Yeah. So hopefully those people are back. But if they're not, fuck it. They watched a good film. The real reason I wanted to bring this of all of Peter Weir's films is because he's a gentle soul. He's a collaborative soul.
Yeah.
And you know me, I love a making of.
Yeah, you do.
I love a making
of. You love this shit.
Quite a lot of Peter Weir's films are people in rooms.
That's weirdly true.
Right?
Yeah.
Just people in rooms.
Yeah.
This less so, right?
I mean, there's rooms on the boat.
Well, let me get into it. So, the original HMS Rose was actually a French ship, right?
Okay.
Captured by the British in 1757. It was in dry dock, scuttled, which is when they sink it deliberately, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They built a replica just for their own shits and giggles.
Yeah.
Based on the same plans as the original and built in Nova Scotia in 1970 by a historian, right?
Okay.
It's the only working remaining frigate in the world.
Wow.
And Peter Weir was just at a maritime festival, having had this script offered to him,
right,
but not entirely sure if he wanted to do it or not.
Okay.
He then learned that the boat was for sale.
Okay.
And kind of felt that, all right, that's fate. I found a 1970 built one for one replica of a fucking frigate.
From the 1700s.
The only one still in circulation in the world, and it's for sale. So they bought it, and this is the boat that they show in any shot where the boat is at sea.
Right.
Because this is filmed at sea.
Yeah. I would have hoped so.
Well, you say that. Think of the logistics. Where'd you get the electricity for running the cameras?
Generators. Batteries.
Yep. The lights. The coffee machine. All of which you've got to take with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you then go from making a Hollywood film with Russell Crowe and $150 million. You're no longer doing it in a studio.
Right.
You're doing it on a boat on the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is wild to me.
Insurance must have been fucking massive.
Right. On a wooden boat, nonetheless. Yeah. You're like, right, fires.
Yeah, tons of shit. A generator on a wooden boat. Yeah,
a rock.
Yeah, yeah. And if any accidents do happen, it's a one of one.
Right.
Okay.
And everyone's probably dying because we've got some support vehicles.
So fucking stressful.
Right. Everything's constantly rolling about.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So you put your coffee down. Two minutes later, your coffee is on your shoes.
Right.
And you're like, mint, all right, cool.
Lids were invented at this point.
So, less practical. They did 10 days of filming.
All of this in 10 days?
Not all of this.
Oh, okay.
10 days of filming at sea, which is where you get the long shots.
Yeah.
Anytime you see the boat in full, in water, with the crew in various states of repair or disrepair.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even on a sunny day, it's fucking near impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
So, they needed another boat.
Okay.
So, they built a whole other boat.
Amazing.
From scratch.
Yeah.
They rebuilt the whole boat. No shortcuts, no sets. 27 miles of rope were made.
Okay.
They rigged all of the sails with the right kind of ropes in the right places. Every bit of ironwork you see in this film is hand-built by the crew.
Right.
Because if you buy those bits manufactured,
yeah,
they don't look like 1797.
No, they don't.
They look like 2003.
Yeah.
So, fuck it. Let's get all of that made. 2,000 costumes.
Incredible.
All the wood, you see, hand-carved, and all placed inside a 17 million gallon tank of water.
Right.
Which it was lowered into by a massive crane onto a massive gimbal.
Right.
That can swing the entire weight of the ship back and forth, make it rock in the water or react to blasts. So a lot of the interior shots are done on that fucker.
Right, okay.
On either ship, no one can stand up straight.
Right.
Because the ceilings are too fucking low.
Yeah, of course.
So you've got to do all your shots
right.
with everybody crouching for the entire fucking 10 weeks of the shoot.
Right.
There's a thing with, I know my bedroom door, you've got a duck to get into the bedroom.
Yeah, it's because your house is built for little people.
Little people, because apparently everyone was smaller back then, right?
Yeah.
Most people were. Except for sailors, because they needed to fucking carry shit. So you weren't grabbing little guys off the bench.
Right.
You were grabbing giants.
Right, yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
Even in real life.
Giant 5'6" people.
Watching the making of this, everyone is hunched like a banana trying to do their job.
I mean, same. Right now. Same right now. Hunched like a weird banana. Not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
Sheer laziness. This is training, this is. This is 37 years of work paying off.
There you go.
You know what I mean? I'd have been a mint sailor.
Do you think?
Yeah. Walking around like a question mark all day. Fucking what? Throwing some cannonballs in a cannon. Sign me up.
Right, okay.
Careful though, might get a splinter.
Fine.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's basically the main risk in this film.
One of the consequences of the filming method they did is big cast.
Yeah.
Quite of whom, you know, they're not massive actors,
right.
But they've got profile. They could do London stages. A lot of them are London theatre actors.
Okay.
When you're going out to sea and you're doing everything in Mexico, you're on set in costume every day.
Right.
Just because on a boat,
right.
You need all the cast in the background.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's not just people in rooms. It's everyone in one room. So everyone's in every scene.
Yeah.
Even if they're just mooching. So you've got to pay everyone for every day that they're on set.
That's a good fucking gig to get.
It's a great gig
That's
to get, isn't it?
That's a good gig to get. Fuck
it. You don't have to do anything. You just need to be in the background out of focus. But if we switch you for an extra, people are going to be like, who's that fucker? Mm-hmm. We've not seen him before. Or get a sense of there being far more people on the boat than there are. They're like, no, there's 100 guys.
Yeah.
Which by the end of the film, you're kind of going to know by face.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just has to be those 100 guys on set every day.
That's fucking incredible. I mean, good for them. You know what I mean?
Easy money.
Easy money for them. Terrible for the studio.
Terrible for the studio.
Terrible for the studio.
This comes back to a time and time again. Mm-hmm. Do you know the Stanford Prison Experiment?
Maybe?
There's a documentary about it. They got volunteers and ran a fake prison.
Is this
some of them were guards and some of them were prisoners?
And they figure out if they're electrocuting someone else on the other side.
No, that's the Milgram experiment.
Milgram experiment.
Where everyone kills everyone with increasingly high voltage
because they're
just told the experiment must continue.
Yeah.
Stanford Prison Experiment is different. The participants were randomly assigned to be either prisoners or guards in a simulated prison.
Yeah.
And then the guards were given a role of like, keep these people as obedient as possible.
Right.
And the prisoners were given the role of like, just do you, just be yourself.
Yeah.
And immediately led to abusive, dehumanizing behaviors, emotional distress. It was an experiment that determined if you set people up in a position of power, but don't give them any clear instruction or any clear rules.
Right.
And then just make these people as obedient as possible.
Right.
We just devolve.
Right, okay.
We just did, well, like, it's just a thing. We just, you immediately get people who abuse power.
But
people,
we saw this on the poop cruise.
Right.
That documentary about the fucking cruise ship that, that gets stranded and then the toilets stop working and then everyone's making shitty lasagnas in every toilet everywhere.
Yeah.
There were like fucking tribes forming of like the mattress tribe on the third deck.
Yeah.
It's insane. And that was 4 days at sea.
4 days.
Yeah.
So they thought the best thing they could do for the making of this film was take their untrained actors and put them on a 2-week boot camp. On a 2-week boot camp where they would all be taught how to sail.
Right.
So that when they were on the background, they looked like they knew what they were doing because they did know what they were doing to the point where the end of the boot camp was the cast sailing the boat.
Amazing. That's incredible.
And the reason it got a bit Stanford Prison Experiment is one of Russell Crowe's ideas was that everyone had color-coded t-shirts.
Right.
So the officers wore one color, the midshipmen wore another color, the crew wore another color. So by the time they were on set and they were interacting with each other naturally, everybody had already internalized the social hierarchy of the boat. So you could look a man in the face and immediately know how much respect you owed him, because you'd had weeks of going, that guy's not my rank.
That's okay. That's quite a good idea.
Brilliant idea.
If the intentions are correct. But also, in the back of my mind, I've just got Russell Crowe walking around in a golden t-shirt whilst everyone is walking around in like human filth. And he's just sort of like, you all need to know who I am.
Yeah, 100%.
And where I stand in this hierarchy, all right?
Continues. I love the way they made this film.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real replica of Captain Cook's ship, HMS Endeavour.
Yeah.
Just going around on a cruise. They got some footage of that.
Amazing.
Hurricane strength storms. Nearly sinking the boat, and another rogue wave causing the mast to come off.
Amazing.
And then,
did they have to dock for that, or did they fix it at sea?
No, they docked. They weren't far off. They weren't far off. And then the wildest fact for me, besides the fact that they've built a 17th century frigate from scratch,
sure,
by hand,
yeah,
trained the cast to sail that boat and then filmed them both at sea and then in a giant fucking bathtub filled with 17 million gallons of water.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe learned violin.
That's amazing. That's, I know, okay, right. That sounded like a fake reaction. Learning an instrument after the age of 25 is fucking nigh on impossible.
And when
it's
you think
so hard.
It's insane. And the violin doesn't
the
have
violin
frets.
The violin is so fucking hard to learn. So that's sort of like you have to have pitch implanted to know that you're hitting the right notes. Yeah. That's fucked. There's no frets. It's all sliding.
Yep.
So the scene where he's doing the plucking shit.
All scenes of them two playing, because Paul Bettany also learned cello.
What the fuck is happening?
He was quoted as saying, "The cello is a truly ghastly instrument. I sound like I'm trying to climb inside a squirrel."
Okay, that's actually incredible.
Right?
I can't think of a better way to sum up a cello.
It was only when I rewatched the film knowing this, that there's, you realise all the scenes of them playing, they're in full shot with the instrument in view.
Yeah.
So we would know instantly if their fingers were doing the wrong shit.
Yeah, no. So this, again, it was very sort of respectable, because I thought that they were matching the soundtrack being played into the room incredibly well. But then I also had to acknowledge that my limited knowledge of stringed orchestral instruments
meant that it was a hazy area. No, he got a expert on music of the era,
right,
who played violin to teach him the songs, wrote. So he didn't learn to read music. He just practiced.
That's amazing.
And just learned them all by memory. And there's lovely behind the scenes footage. The plucky bit is, it's not them playing because they have to concentrate.
Yeah, of course.
But then just them playing the plucky bit and like the cast and crew having a clap and a,
really
and a dance.
Lovely.
It's just like,
I love this.
Literally, the dedication to historical accuracy in the making of this film.
This is insane.
Is insane.
Yeah, this is actually insane. Okay. That is a fucking wild fact. That's blown my mind a little bit.
Not the building the boat. You're like, ah.
No, I mean,
learn violin. No,
but as in like, building a boat is impressive, right? But there's loads of boats. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People do that shit all
fair.
The time.
That is fair.
They do it all the
there
time.
There are a lot of boats.
There are a lot of boats. People build boats all day, every day. Like, I mean, there was a thing in Bliss Hill in Telford.
Yes.
The Victorian Museum.
Been there once, yeah.
They built a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they built a boat.
And they got a blacksmith there doing all the ironwork and shit. You know what I mean? That's great. And they make candles. And they got a sweet shop full of sherbet. Very little else. It's infuriating. If you don't like sherbet,
don't go.
Tough shit.
It's a write-off. The days are right.
Honestly. You just you just come out with like a bag of loose sherbet. It's like a see-through baggie of loose sherbet. Horrendous to have in your glove box when you're driving around. Because it just looks sort of like mega cocaine when it comes out slightly piss yellow or a bit cherry pink. And you're like, oh.
Could be powdered MDMA.
Sure. Could be anything. Yeah. Could be powdered piss. Yeah. It's not though, because it's sherbet and you spent 40 quid. Anyway, they built a boat.
They built a boat.
Yeah, they had a boat building. That's cool. It was impressive, and it is really impressive. Objectively, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's not something like Russell Crowe picking up 17th century violin from a master of that era of music is mental to me. Because A...
For a film, because you're not going to use it again.
There's a master of 17th century violin out there.
Oh, yeah.
That's his job.
Yeah.
That is such a niche fucking market that you're catering to there.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
With all academia, you find a thing, you go, I like violin. Yeah. And someone goes, great, we've got loads of those guys.
Yeah.
What do you love about it specifically? And you're like, shit, I need a job.
Yeah.
So you
old
find,
violin.
You find the one thing that no one's not teaching.
Yeah.
And then you research that. It's proper, like, academia is find a niche and cover it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll be that guy.
Oh, you want to learn how to play violin? Let me show you where it came from. So you know how you hold it like this and you fucking, you do your stroking bits like this. Put your hand 3 degrees left.
yeah.
17th
yeah, yeah.
century. Welcome to the fucking lecture. Let's play some music. You know what I mean?
But that sense of, I think the reason that I left the Russell Crowe one till last is because realistically, I have no frame of reference for what a 17 million gallon of water tank looks like.
I used to live in a house in Kidderminster that had a 4-man bathtub. You saw it.
Yeah.
It was insane.
It was, yeah.
You could get 4 fully grown adults.
You could.
Sitting with their legs straight out, 2 opposite each other, and you would not touch another human being in that bath. It was enormous. It took up over 2/3 of the bathroom. Then there was a toilet and a sink and a mirror, and that was it. That was the entire bathroom. But you had like a foot to walk in the bathroom and then like 8 feet of bathtub. So I'm going to use that as my frame of reference. I'm going to say 17 million gallons is pretty big because that bathtub could hold 14 million. It took 3 hours to fill. It was fucking outrageous.
I had the same. I had a, it wasn't as big as yours, but I'd used it.
You didn't have to say that.
I used it twice. And the first time I used it, I was like, well, this is a bollocks.
Yeah.
And then my girlfriend at the time was like, let's have a bath. And I was like, well, okay, fine. Mm. But you're going to need to maintain this mood for 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's the nightmare.
Great,
it's nightmare
this
fuel.
This is going to be an exercise in frustration for a very long time.
Bro, the fucking, if I wanted a bath, if I was driving around the Midlands in my old job, I used to have to drive around quite a lot. If I was driving around the Midlands and I was like, I want a bath when I get in, I just want to chill out and do whatever, I'd have to nip home at 1, put the bath on, go to work for 4 hours, come back, and it would be a third full. And I'm like, all right, I'm nearly there. I can cook dinner, get everything sorted, clean the house, in the bath for 11 p.m. sharp.
So, this movie.
This movie. Fucking ridiculous. Blew my absolute tits off.
I have reasons why I didn't succeed as a franchise.
I have thoughts on it. I've done zero research into it.
I have done all the research and I can tell you definitively why.
Okay, hit me with it.
No.
Fine.
You've seen this exact story before.
What a full stop that would be. No. 4 out of 10. Thanks for listening. See you later.
Because before we do, I wanna rip the plaster off this movie.
Sure.
It's not a naval warfare film.
Okay.
You think that? It's an excellent display of everything that goes into a movie. There's no doubt about that. Like we were talking about the ship, the performances, the pacing, the cinematography on this is insane.
Incredible.
Like the way things are put together. I don't think there's a better depiction of healthy male friendship.
I'll agree.
It's like no homo, just a bunch of bros.
No homo.
No homo, just bro.
Just bro.
Just hobro.
No hobro.
You know? Learning to be better friends to one another and achieving more than they could alone. Social debates about what it is to be a good person.
Interesting.
Ship battles and flying into fog. What choices are you willing to make 100 other men bear the consequences of?
Me personally?
No, just socially.
I was going to say, I could think of at least 4. Think of at least 4. A, overspending on sherbet. I'm willing for 100 men to take
to
the sacrifice
that.
On that.
Well, you've sold Bliss Hill to everyone.
I'll eat all the sherbet. They can pay for it. Also, Bliss Hill's amazing. If anyone from Bliss Hill is listening, fucking sponsor us.
Do we know anyone
And
from
let
Bliss
me
Hill?
In for free, because it's mint.
It is pretty good.
Everyone's good in like full costume and shit. And they got all the placards that explains everything. I fucking love them.
You love a placard.
I fucking love a placard.
I'm gonna explain this film in 2 words.
Go on.
Star Trek. Watch that shit.
Interesting.
Click. It's swap fog for nebulas. Let's fly into that nebula and
interesting.
The French are Klingons.
Yeah.
Aubrey and Maturin are Kirk and Spock.
Yes.
Brash leader.
Yeah. super nerdy science officer on deck just wants to fucking look at iguanas on the Galapagos Islands.
Right.
Accidentally gets a stab in, then gets nursed back to health, and Kirk gets the fucking whole guilty stuff. Holy shit.
This is Star Trek.
Yeah. And this Kirk's and Aubrey's constantly trying to fuck that alien. This is Star Trek.
This is Star Trek.
Yeah.
But it's 100% that. It's social. It's microcosms of social commentary. Like every episode of Star Trek Next Generation is the ship flies up.
My voice just cracked. And if you don't edit it out, we're no longer friends. It's an interesting choice to make mid-episode.
I once laughed to the point of crying with a friend, a very, very dear friend.
It wasn't me, but that's fine.
No, it wasn't. Let's talk about we were on edibles.
Let's talk about your other... Sure.
And we were talking about using dominant language in the bedroom.
Sure.
And having your voice crack.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
Hey, baby, whose mercy is that? You just have to immediately get dressed.
Flip it. Someone's telling you exactly what to do. Yes, daddy. Oh, fuck. I fucked it. I'm so sorry. I'm just going to.
You like that, don't you, Mitch? You just have to stop. You'd have to stop and just not acknowledge it. Just slowly start getting
it's
dressed
like
again.
It's like putting your full might behind, like, you know, like an ass smack. And and they're just sort of like, what was that? And you're like, oh, I've got to leave. I've got to go. Yeah. I've nearly just blown my shoulder out doing that. If this is where we're at, I can't fuck the Iron Man.
You spank a miss, hit your own face.
That's so good. Tying someone up in the distance and then tripping on the end of the bed.
Yeah.
Just leaving immediately. The alternate version of Gerald's game.
It's exactly that.
Handcuffed to the bed.
There's no recovery from this.
Accidentally sneeze and fart at the same time. I've got to go.
Yeah.
I've got to leave. Sorry. Sorry.
You're so sexy.
Oh. Fuck yeah. Oh, God.
So this film is Star Trek.
I'm glad we got here.
And
this was a fun journey.
It's great.
Yeah. My voice cracked. I've got to go. I'm so sorry. Thanks for listening. See you later.
I don't think it's accidentally Star Trek. Do you remember I said about our original author, Patrick O'Brien? In my head, when this clicked for me, I was like, oh my God, this is Star Trek set 400 years before Star Trek and written decades before. Because this is oldie worldy, right?
Sure. It's fucking 1805.
But the books themselves were actually written in the 70s. And at that point, I went, oh, he didn't start... He was born in 1920, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
Didn't start writing until really late in life. And then I realized Star Trek was before this. After Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those parallels where I was like, oh, easy parallel here. Yeah. Star Trek's lifted off a whole bunch of naval stuff.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, though, it's kind of not the snake eating its own tail, but I feel like we're at a point now where stories are being retold in various different ways. You look at Top Gun Maverick being Star Wars A New Hope. It's identical, beat for beat.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, it's
film.
A beat for beat remake of that film. It's just Tom Cruise.
Force Awakens is a beat for beat remake of Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's just, it's a snake eating its own tail. And it's always space films. You know what I mean?
100%. And also saved by the fact that Patrick O'Brien was writing in a tradition of storytelling that is also covered by C.S. Forrester with the Captain Horatio Hornblower novels.
Right.
Which I don't know if you'd have remembered. It was 90s television.
Yeah.
With Ian Griffith, who played Mr. Fantastic in the original Fantastic Four movies. You know the old ones with Jessica Alba?
Yeah, yeah. I know the movies.
Reed Richards.
Yeah.
That actor.
Yeah.
Played a British naval captain who had it was a 1 hour a week naval adventure, very much like these.
Okay.
And that was the basis for Star Trek.
Right.
So you're exactly right. It went naval history.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Yeah.
Naval history.
Yeah. It's that thing though, isn't it? I mean, most of sci-fi has to be based in some sort of
ship.
Yeah. Relatable fiction. You fucking love a boat. This is the weirdest episode. This is the weirdest time for me to find out. On the day of my 37th birth, you are...
I don't think it's boats. I think it's terrariums.
What?
Right. Let me explain. Terrarium is a really big, complex thing.
Yeah.
A little slice that you can look at
yeah.
and go, oh, that's interesting. Because it's not the whole thing.
Right.
It's not somebody making a film about human society.
Yeah, yeah. Some like The Truman Show.
It's the cunts on a boat. Even The Truman Show is, yeah. There's the bubble.
Yeah.
I like the vehicle.
Got you.
Being a slice of...
Ooh, so okay.
Whether it's a boat or a spaceship or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Alien, you set a stage, you limit the size of the stage, yeah. And then you put representatives of a larger issue
yeah.
in a can and go, now let's see what happens. It's a terrarium. It's a little small like boiling pot.
And then what... Obviously, with the Alien franchise, what you do is you let it run long enough so that Fede Alvarez pops up out of nowhere and decides to ruin it, puts seven acts in a film and is like, fuck the terrarium.
Yeah.
Here's no limits and everyone's scared of guns now.
Perfect.
Is it? I was trying to get to a punchline, but I got myself angry. Stupid.
The problem with Alien Romulus, which we've said before...
Is it's actual shit. It's no, actual it's shit.
It's that the first two-thirds of the film... are the best the Alien franchise has been in decades. And then the third act of the film
sure.
is so bad mm-hmm. that the entire film becomes one of the worst mm-hmm. in the Alien franchise mm. of all time.
And then when you get to the fifth act.
right. So it's a roller coaster where it nearly lands it and you're like, maybe, maybe, maybe. When they're on the planet,
sure.
perfection. When they sure. get to the research station, perfection.
It's good.
And then suddenly
perfection's a stretch.
An alien catches a human and gently places them on a ladder.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
But then also it's before that. They're instinctively scared of guns now.
Mm.
They've been born for moments.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh shit, that's an AR.
They've never seen one.
That's an AR. Mm. I need to be careful of that. What?
Right.
What? Right. I'm sorry. What was the Queen doing when everyone had fucking flamethrowers and the fucking...
Running away from the French battleship, the Acheron.
Got, yeah.
Because this is Master and Commander.
Because this is Master and Commander.
Not Alien Romulus.
We're not on a Fede run.
Which then does lead the question.
Mm.
If Peter Weir, Russell Crowe, Paul Bettany mm-hmm. had been successful
right.
in not spending $150 million to make right. a film
yeah.
that made $200 back.
Right.
And lost 8 of the Oscar nominations of its 10
right.
to Lord of the Rings Return of the King because they released this the same year as that.
Right.
Because why?
Why? Why the fuck? Why? Why?
Like, leave the year.
You've seen the first two.
Right.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Give it a beat.
right, right.
Wait until next season.
But let's say they had given it a beat.
Yeah.
And it hadn't cost many hundreds of million.
Right.
And hadn't made just about its budget back.
Yeah.
And this had been a franchise.
Yeah, yeah.
We might have seen a world where Fede Alvarez did direct Master and Commander.
That ship would have sank. That ship would have sank immediately.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into this because it's going to get me pissed off. What I am going to get into real quickly is I've done very minimal research into this because A, I knew you were excited to get mm-hmm. into the behind the scenes stuff and I'm desperate for you to tell me about this. This is why I love doing this show with you. You get super nerdy about the making of. I get immersed in the film and get lost in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great fucking like 50-50. Master and Commander. I did a little bit of research. There's people... You've mentioned before that there's people that don't like this film. And I had to know why.
There's a few.
Yeah, I had to know why at the end of it. So I did a little dig in on like opinions on Reddit and stuff like this. Yeah. And
what's people's problem with this movie?
What's happening with it? Why don't people get on with it as well as I think they should or... Why doesn't it resonate with people as well as I think it should? A lot of people are saying like the ending's too vague. Nothing really happens. It's just a start and a mid and then it kind of just drifts off into nothing. And I'm like, that's fine. And that's fine. That's a fine way to look at this movie. Because if you need like a solid full stop ending, I feel like you might have missed the film
mm-hmm.
and the point it was trying to make.
It's not about boats.
Because you can look at it in like a bunch of different ways.
It's like watching Dead Poets Society and going, but did they pass the class?
Yeah. Did they? What was their exam results?
Right. Or watching Truman Show going, but what happens when he leaves?
So did she find him?
Right.
Because the dome was massive.
Right.
She would have been running around that shit for ages. Did she find him? Because if I was Truman and saw her again, I'd been sort of like, you fucking knew.
Mm.
You fucking knew and didn't come back. My dad came back.
Right.
And he was sacked. They came up with some bullshit to get him back on. He broke onto the set. Mm. What have you done? I was cutting eyes out of magazines like a psychopath for decades. Where you been?
Right, but we don't get any of that.
You just be sat at home watching.
People don't think Truman Show's not finished, but this one, yeah, exactly. They're like, oh,
there's no ending.
All the tension's been released, yeah. And now we're just on hunting for a boat again. Why is this not continued? Yeah,
I get it. So if you look, if you'd have given me this film 5 years ago, mm-hmm. I'd have been like, fucking, right, okay, so these guys, first off, 1805, couldn't give a shit. B, they're on an old wooden ship, couldn't give a shit. Mm-hmm. So they're tasked with finding the Acheron, which they do. They get the shit kicked out of them.
Yeah.
They suffer casualties. They move on. They start building the boat and the Acheron pops back up and is like, oh, hey. So the Acheron's back. And then he's like, nah, fuck it. We're mm-hmm. running away. Let's go Brazil and yeah. buy some fucking fish and float with a lady. And then we're back out at sea. But mm-hmm. where are we going? Galapagos Islands?
Yeah. Let's go look at your bird.
Oh, amazing. Do you mind if I just nip out and try and find this bird and make scientific history? Nah, fuck off, mate. We're going south. We're going to go get snowy because it's too windy up here. We're going to go get snowy.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come straight back up.
They just potter about not figuring out whether or not they want to fight a boat or not. And then at the end decide they don't want to fight the
exactly.
boat.
Exactly. This whole thing. But then they kind of do chase it at the end. And it's fine. It's fine. You see it off in the distance. It doesn't matter. The fact that this is such a fucking delicate character study of like tensions that can arise in certain situations and relatable situations, not that you have to be stranded at sea in a tiny little boat. You can just be in proximity with someone. Mm-hmm. You can have a friend, whether it's like, take work for an example, your manager being mate with another mm-hmm. manager, and then you've got a bunch of like people that you're all managing and the tensions that can arise in this sort of thing. It's all a relatable thing if you sort of like 100%. Lift the veil, right? The thing that got me about this film and the thing that's going to hit me weirdly hard forever is I've been doing a bit of research for an upcoming series. Mm-hmm. I think it's early next year, but I'm trying to get prepped.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been looking into this whole sort of like haptic viewing stuff
right.
and the differences between older movies and newer movies and the cinematography that kind of helps
yep.
immerse you in these films, right? The thing that I found with Master Commander is the use of the background is so masterful
yeah.
and so fucking intentional
yeah.
that it is impossible to be in any way, shape or form distracted by anything else because yeah. my eyes were scanning every frame
yeah.
for every tiny detail and everything was, I mean like to the,
it sings.
I was trying to pop like the little, oh, there's a coffee cup.
Yeah,
is
yeah,
there
yeah,
fuck?
Yeah.
This is a fucking, there is like frayed rope that is in the top right corner in yeah. one frame for no reason. But I was like, there's a bit of focus on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this tiny frayed knot will come back and haunt us later. No reason for it. It was just an interesting thing in a frame
yep.
that was there. And if you look at modern films, it's all mid shots. Mm-hmm. It's all blurred backgrounds. I feel like it's cold, it's distant yeah. and it doesn't immerse you into their world as much, whereas Master and Commander do it
mm-hmm.
intentionally at certain points. If there's a speech going on, if there is a poignant moment of dialogue, if there is a tense moment between two characters that are resolving an issue or hatching a plan mm-hmm. or going over like the gruesome details of a surprise attack from a fucking French ship that they had no idea how they got there, it's a mid shot
mm-hmm.
to a close up with a slightly blurred background, so you have nothing but that one focal point. Mm-hmm. And then it'll immediately cut to a big wide shot with one of the most ornate rooms in existence, mm-hmm. and you're just eating everything.
Yeah.
Everything hits you like this whole thing.
I think what's fascinating is in a modern film,
mm-hmm.
and it's strange to me because to me, Master and Commander still is a modern film, but I have to recognize I'm old.
It's, yeah, yeah. Right? It's 22 years ago.
Right, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
A modern film.
Fuck.
Isn't going to be constrained by the geography of the boat because they're not on a boat.
Yes.
By building an exact replica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could want to have the camera further away.
100%.
You can't. There's a fucking wall there.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
And those details that have been built lovingly into the sets by people who are building the boat
mm-hmm.
in the same way it would have been built in the era means that the entire frame becomes storytelling.
Yeah.
Which is a benefit of the hard 150 million.
Definitely.
This is a risk that yeah. might sink, which with CGI you just don't have.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And then as a result, if you're making that modern film, you're not drawn to focus on the background as a director.
Yeah.
Because you have no love for it.
Exactly.
Whereas if you're Peter Weir, you really need to justify to the studio why you spent $200 million on a boat.
Yeah, 100%. Dude, I agree wholeheartedly. But the thing with this haptic viewing, and we're going to, I'll explain it more next year when we get into a specific series that focuses a lot on it. And I feel like it's like a weird awakening in my brain. It makes you feel like you have an extra sense and it turns a viewing experience into a feeling experience. And then the smallest fucking pin drop of emotion in the background or a shift change in tension, you're in it. There's nothing said. There is nothing particular that has happened in that scene, but you sense something has immediately switched. And fuck me, this film is rife with it.
It really is.
It is rife with it. It really is. Like I said at the beginning, I found it difficult to check messages.
Yeah.
I couldn't fucking... It's 2 hours I was out of business.
It's a film you can almost smell.
It's exactly that. It gives you the fucking... It gives you an extra sense.
Yeah.
And it's such a rarity these days. Mm. It is such a rarity these days.
And I think it's one of the things that Peter Weir has as a superpower.
Yeah.
Is taking a subject that you initially... A Truman Show is an exception. A vast majority of his films are about subjects I personally would rather... watch paint dry, but I know if it's Peter Weir, he's gonna make it fucking thrilling.
Yeah, 100%.
And I'm gonna learn a bunch of shit about a type of life that I have never once been interested in enough to
even consider. 100%, I'm with
you. And for my what it really means, because Truman Show was bleak.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a bleak film.
No, not at all.
This is a warm hug of a movie.
It is.
And ultimately, it comes down to a very simple lesson that listening doesn't mean hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that there's so many debates or arguments or moments of friction between each other. We listen, but not so that we can hear and take on board.
Mm-hmm.
We listen so that we can say we have listened when we then go on to say what we were going to say anyway.
Sitting around and waiting for your turn to speak, right?
If you can claim to have listened, you can kind of go on to your original path, not change, and let yourself off having to do any actual compromise.
Yeah.
This film lays out the good that happens when you actually hear what the other side is trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Aubrey and Maturin argue.
They do.
And they're not listening to one another.
They are not.
They're picking each other's side apart rather than going, why do you value this opinion?
Mm.
What is it about this side of the debate that I'm not seeing? What can you tell me about why you love duty or why you love nature?
Yeah.
What is it that's important to you? And it's also got the flip side of if you're not part of that conversation, if you're not hearing what the crew around you are saying and you're not listening to them, you end up becoming a bit of a Jonah.
Okay.
Where you... like the young midshipmen, don't get that respect because people don't feel that you hear them.
Yeah.
You get shut out from the conversation and any conversation that doesn't include you doesn't have your interests at heart.
Yeah.
You're not listening, so you don't get to talk.
Yeah, yeah.
He tries to sing and join in and they're like, nope.
Yeah.
We won't let you sing with us because you don't listen to us.
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't step up when we step up.
Mm.
So fuck yourself. And the film's very clear where that ends. And I genuinely think as a film about two people who disagree respectfully, still love one another, are passionate about what they care about different things, fight for it out of respect from the other one. And the lesson of regardless of where you are in your life, you have to listen properly and take opposing views on board. Literally on board.
Yeah.
And then your boat's fine.
I love that. That's a great takeaway.
It's a lovely little, the world's fucked. The Truman Show, I get it.
Yeah.
Find somebody you disagree with.
Yeah.
And figure out what they love and what they like about the thing you disagree with.
This is kind of the podcast.
Isn't it?
B-movies, actual cinema, the whole show. Amazing.
Peter Weir, everybody.
I love this. I've got a little thought.
Go for it.
On the what it really means, because I took something a little different. Again, going back to the opinion of like, well, nothing really happens at the end and blah, blah. I feel like there's a subtle point that the film is trying to make with the whole warfare aspect and the warfare at sea and how people are just blindly following duty because there is no contact with England. There hasn't been for many times. There's a whole bit where it's like, we're going home.
Yeah.
My mate has just been fucking shot.
Yeah.
We're going home. Oh, actually, he's got the bullet out. Okay. All right, we're going to Galapagos Islands. We're going to go and actually enjoy some sun. He's going to get his science research. We're going to have a fucking rest. But you guys can do your fishing.
Yeah.
Going to get some food. We're going to sort ourselves
out. And then when we see the boat again and he goes, oh, I guess we're going then. He's like, oh, it's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. It'll be out there. It's fine. And then they just casually sail off.
Yeah.
Having got the scientific research, but they're still sailing after the fucking boat.
There's no rush. They find a compromise.
They do. And I think there's a gorgeous little thing at the very end of the film where it really slowly zooms out of this peaceful ship sailing off to the horizon, and in the distance is the Acheron.
Yeah.
Just over the horizon. Yep. And it zooms out far enough. And to me, it was a little point of, the film can't end with a full stop.
No.
Because if the film does end with a full stop, there would be no wars today. I feel like it's a continuous thing of, what's the next ship? What's the next fight?
What's the next thing that people aren't listening to each other about?
Where am I being sent next?
Yeah.
This whole thing of, because it's all well and good, the boat, having the conversations and finding the compromise.
Finding diplomacy.
And finding diplomacy there. The people at home who are waging wars against other countries, and the reason that you're in this fucking boat in the first place are not.
Yeah. And that's never going to end.
It's never going to end. It never did. Mm-hmm. This is it's a little insight into not even the fucking prequel to warfare. This is like a few centuries in.
A few centuries
into warfare. This is where we are. If you want to get caught up, have a look around. There you go. I don't think this film could have ended any other way.
No, it couldn't.
Because
it absolutely couldn't.
We're still living it. And we're just in different boats.
And I think the film is wise to not make it, okay, well, they got that boat.
100%.
Because, okay, what's the point then? We just watched a war movie.
The boat is one stepping stone. There's always another boat. There's always another fucking war. There's always another conflict.
There's not always another mate.
There's not. And that's the gorgeous thing about this film.
Yeah.
That's the gorgeous thing about this film. Surround yourself with people you can fucking get along with. And if you don't get along with them, learn something from them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Work on it.
I love this shit. This film was mint.
Isn't it?
This film was mint. What are you going to rate it?
I'm going to rate this a fat 10.
Fair.
I think it's an underrated gem. I think
it is.
It calls back to Saturday afternoon, old 100%. Technicolor swashbuckling and adventures.
Yeah.
Whilst being incredibly current. And just every single matchstick of this film is handcrafted with love.
It is, wholeheartedly.
What about yourself?
I'm going to agree. Fat 10.
Yeah.
This is a fat 10. It's such a delicate character study. It's a subtle commentary on where we're at and a sort of whole insight into warfare, but it's just a gorgeous slice of life.
And if you're feeling politically separated from the people around you, or like the world is going to shit because of people that disagree with you, watch this film and remember that most people that disagree with you don't disagree on where we're going or where we should be going, just how to get there.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Beautiful. Right, that's it. We are out of time. So just thank you. We love you all dearly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the support lately.
Honestly, it's been fucking insane. We love you all from the bottom of our hearts.
We really do. And to thank you for that, we know a lot of you listen on a Monday, right? So what we're going to do now is Ben's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes and feelings of Master and Commander Far Side of the World into a Monday motivational pep talk. And do you know what? This week, we might have already done it, but hey.
I think we have.
It's fine.
To be fair. I'll pull some out of my ass. It's fine.
Perfect. Because I'm just going to tell everyone to consume.
Okay. So find someone that you disagree with. Learn a little bit about yourself. Know that everything that you're thinking is not an absolute be all end all. And if you think that that is, you're fucking wrong. Because Russell Crowe took up violin at a late age. What have you done? What have you done recently? Think about it. When was the last time you picked up a violin and learnt 17th century violin?